All right, here we are, the final episode in the longevity series. This episode features us, your hosts, myself, Mark Champagne, and both my MD friends, Dr. Rhett Langley and Dr. Philip Gallegos. The purpose of this episode is really to recap for you and ourselves the actual insights from this series.
Yeah, Mark, thanks for starting this off. I want to begin by just letting the listeners know what we learned, and because it's obviously very interesting to us. We searched high and low, looking at the science, interviewing all types of practitioners, experts, and people that are deep in the game. And surprisingly enough, it all comes back to simple takeaways, simple rules, and ancestral living, which, as you know, is one of the foundations of our practices here at Thrive.
Yeah, well said. I mean, I don't know about for you guys, but for me, like you just said, obviously Thrive is based on ancestral living and principles. But I noticed even with the three of us, like we really saw this and really started to focus even harder on this principle, or making sure that, you know, those elements were really baked into everything we're offering, based on the fact that every single guest really came to this conclusion, no matter what the topic was, right? Whether it's sleep or movement or eating, it was just so obvious.
Yeah, they all just came back to basic principles. So quality versus quantity when it comes to longevity. So it was Kara that said a life without unnecessary suffering. That was her definition of longevity, and she hit the nail on the head. So all of our guests really were focused more on quality versus quantity. Although with new medical science and technology, we can extend quantity, but definitely want to also improve the quality of that extension. So,
yeah, and before we jump into these specifics, I really want to take time to hit this point home as well, is that at Thrive, we try to empower you, the listener, empower you, the client. And that's really what it's all about, you know, and that's what we're finding through the investigation of this podcast as well, is that generally we already know innately how to be healthy.
Yeah.
That's kind of how our philosophy here at Thrive is, that we don't try to know more than anybody. We try to empower you to learn how to treat yourself well and live a long lasting, healthy life.
Totally. Well, and I think the other thing with that too is just the idea of simple, right? Like simple work. Simple is repeatable. Simple is actionable. Like as soon as you start adding in all these wild variables and like make the situation complex, which we kind of naturally do as humans in general, just the chances of actually, you know, following through with these things starts to go down. So I think, you know, like we're obviously as a team, like we use a lot of different technology and try to bring it all together, but at its core, it's to deliver a plan. And just like this show, it's like deliver some recipes and actionable steps that you can take like right now, right? It's not this big, you know, move a mountain type scenario, although those micro steps probably will consistently over time, but just getting started, right? Why don't we pick one of the areas to at least start with? Because I mean, there's sleep could be a good one. I mean, there's a lot of discussion around sleep these days. There's a lot of great technology around there. I think we all get hit by blue blocking glasses probably every 5 seconds. So I think there are some really good, again, just natural insights left by all guests around sleep. You know, Matt Dawson is one of them that comes to mind right away. And just, you know, controlling the temperature of your room or your bed. In his case, you know, his wife being liking to be a little bit warmer and him being cooler, which is a little bit more natural and goes back to the ancestral living days and sleeping outside and whatnot. So, you know, they make sure their mattress accounts for that, right? I mean, that's just one thing that popped in my mind. But what do you guys think? Anything that comes to mind?
Well, there's plenty of things that you can do for sleep hygiene. You have to have the phases of sleep. So we have to have a certain amount of deep sleep, certain amount of REM sleep. During that time is when your body is recovering, restoring, and regenerating, and then clearing out the gunk that builds up through the lymphatic system in your brain. So if you're not going through and those normal cycles, then you're going to have negative consequences. So you have to have normal restful sleep. So some of the things that you can do for sleep hygiene is keeping the room completely dark. So if you look around your room, anywhere where there's electronics, there's going to be little lights. So that has an effect on your sleep. So I think one of the biggest things is keeping your room dark. Following a circadian rhythm is the ancestral principle on there. It's just waking up with the sun and going to sleep when the sun's going down. So it's getting sun exposure, I should say. So you want to set that circadian rhythm early in the morning if you can. We know it's not all possible. Everybody has different jobs. Everybody goes to work at different hours. But if you can get that early sun exposure, that stimulates the brain to wake up. And then at nighttime, when the sun's going down, that's going to stimulate normal production of the your sleep hormones to start getting you ready to go to sleep.
Yeah, and it's also good to point out that you don't need to wear blue blockers in the morning or during the day generally, because you want that blue light. You know, Philip said, you know, wake up with the sun. Obviously, that's going to help set your circadian rhythm. So don't be going out in that morning walk with blue light blockers, please. That's not,
exactly. That's not
helpful. Yeah, you see some of these Instagram influencers and they're wearing them during the day. It's like, no, you're not supposed to be wearing them during the day. You need the blue light to stimulate you. And then at night is when you need more of the red light. So that's when you wear your blue blocker so that you're not getting that blue light stimulation from your phone, your tablet, your TV, or the artificial light. So that's also when you want to incorporate, if you have one, or is using like a Juve, a Hugo, or any of those other infrared and near infrared lights, which will help kind of set your circadian rhythm as well. So if you use it at night before you go to bed and early morning, you get the benefits from that type of therapy, which is also pretty good for people like you, Mark, that are up north and you guys don't get a lot of sunlight. So you know, it's been shown the people that have the lowest amount of vitamin D levels are people up in the northern hemisphere. So one way to do that is, you know, getting out and getting natural sunlight. We always say that, always get out and get the natural sunlight if you can, but using the red light therapy or using the specific lights that promote vitamin D production, or you're having a supplement. So lots of positives that come from normal vitamin D levels.
Love it. I have to say that's one of the takeaways that I've taken from this. I think I shared it with you guys, but since recording the series, I've just been consciously, as my kind of morning coffee's been brewing, to just step outside on the back deck. And usually at that time, the sun is just starting to come up, and just taking a, you know, this incorporates another one, just breathing, right? And taking in a big, deep breath of fresh air and kind of staring at the sun that's starting, or the light that's starting to come up. And it's just, I think it just, for me at least, it's like, these are the basics. These, like, before that, I would have just sat there and kind of watched the coffee brew, grab it, and then go up to my office and start the day. So, you know, I share this because it doesn't take a long time, right, to do these type of things.
Yeah, what I was going to say also, you look like a silver fox with a nice Canadian tan now, so we know that you're actually doing your ancestral wisdom.
Exactly. Well, and also for all the Canadians listening, I'm just in Toronto, Canada, which is not too far from New York when it comes to sunlight, Philip. I'm not in the North Pole.
We're worried about you, Mark, okay?
Also, Mark, that time that you're talking about where you're out there on your porch and you're getting the sunlight, which is stimulating your pineal gland, and you're waking up and you're taking that deep breath, you're also getting exposure to the outdoor air. And that's also a good time for you, being the mental fitness expert, to start, you know, with your daily gratitude. So that at that moment, you're thanking, you know, you're alive, you're healthy, you're watching the sunrise, and you're part of something bigger. It's a great time to implement that kind of stuff right there.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and that's typically when I'm doing a lot of the like intention setting type work. I do have a copy of Ryan Holiday's Daily Stoic that leans up against the coffee machine. So either I'm trying to take in the actual sense and like the visual of the coffee being made and be really present, or while that's happening, reading one of these passages. But I guess now, and I talk about this as well in my own practices, but just the idea of practice stacking. So now coffee's brewing, grab the book, step out on the deck and take in that sun and a fresh or a big deep breath of air while reading the one passage from his book, The Daily Stoic, for example. It's just a way to get, you know, just like people talk about habit stacking and you know, do something while you're, you know, add in a habit while you're brushing your teeth, or if you know you take a walk every day, you know, tack on a habit. It just makes it easier to build new ones. It's the same thing with these practices.
Those two habits that you're talking about. So it's been, you know, our listeners might be asking, well, how does sleep extend longevity? Or how does saying gratitude extend longevity? Well, if you look in the blue zones, when they're looking at these factors that improve longevity, they're looking, one of the factors was the ability to de-stress and slow down. So if you're not getting enough rest, that's going to lead to anxiety, that's going to lead to dysfunction in your immune system, you're going to get sick. So it improves longevity because you're slowing down, you're de-stressing, you're getting the needed rest that your body needs. So much in this world, that the modern world that we live in, we're just constantly go, go, go. And there's constant demands. We're on our phone. We're looking at social media. There's emails to be addressed. We put all this unnatural stress that we weren't used to having. This is a very modern problem that we have, in very recent in modern times that we're having these problems. So really just getting back to the basics of slowing down, taking a moment, reflection, just spending time in quiet prayer or meditation, all these things that were done and that are currently done by these areas in the blue zone really are just stacks, like you're saying, of just slowing down, de-stressing, and getting proper rest.
Yeah. And think about the paradoxical nature of putting your sleep last. I think a lot of hard chargers, it's definitely accepted in our society to be tough and push, push, push. And, you know, I'm going to sacrifice sleep, when in reality, that probably hurts your performance, especially if you're also into exercising, or if exercising is new to you. So recovery, sleep recovery, and all the things that Philip just mentioned are really important.
For sure. I mean, and I think, you know, if you think about it, and everyone listening, like, it's not that long ago where, you know, people would be saying like, oh yeah, I only sleep 3 hours a night, and that was, you know, a badge of honor. I feel like there's definitely people still doing that, but it's definitely less common than it actually is, or less common now than it was, you know, even 3-4 years ago. So we're making progress. But what's exciting is that, and a lot of the guests have brought this up, but like, whether you're, you know, monitoring your glucose, or you're tracking, I don't know, what you know, the alcohol you're taking in before bed or whatever, like all these different things. Now we have really good sleep tracking devices or solutions to see, oh shit, like that actually does affect, you know, the quality, like you were mentioning different sleep stages, Philip, earlier, like it affects these stages so that we can course correct. Because I think the other big theme that I left with is just having awareness, right? Like we're in a phase now, or a stage of life, I think, where we've got some really great things out there that can help us be more aware, mentally, physically, spiritually, all of these things, be aware of what, you know, what relationships are causing this to go south or whatever, right?
Yeah, and then we also have, to bring awareness, our devices that provide data, so that make you aware of what is causing your issue. So as far as like sleep goes, there's devices such as like the Oura Ring or the Whoop. These devices track your sleep. They tell you what your heart rate variability is, what your resting heart rate is, what your recovery index, your temperature, your core temperature for the night, all these things. So if you're having sleep, we usually at Thrive recommend getting one of these devices, and then we look at your data with you and kind of start helping you figure out why you're not getting enough REM sleep, why you're not getting enough deep sleep, or why you're waking up in the middle of the night. So we look at a bunch of different factors, like if there's any sleep apnea, is there any issues with staying asleep? Is there restless leg? Are there all these factors that play into a non-restful night's sleep? So I think we really like using these devices. And like you said, it just brings awareness. So if you don't have awareness, you're not going to act on anything that may be causing you problems in your life.
For sure.
Cool. Let's move on from sleep, guys. What's next?
I say community. That's a big one people don't talk too much about. And especially now with, you know, being really restricted and, you know, really not having as much, let's say, one-on-one or face-to-face interaction as we probably should. That's probably a good topic because that's come up across the board.
Yeah. The first thing that comes to my mind though is, I don't know why this first thing that hit my mind, but Limbus. And you know, Limbus obviously is the idea of the combination of mental fitness and movement and emotion. But what I really like about Limbus is when they perform the classes, they're in a large group. And I, you know, just remember MCB mentioning how at first people are a little bit apprehensive, but then over time they learn to express how they're feeling through movement. And then it becomes amplified with the group, you know?
Yeah, both Conover, Matt Dawson, and MCB, they're all focused on prioritizing social engagement and prioritizing community. So if you reference the Blue Zone, this is another one of their factors that they looked at, or one of the metrics is social bonds. So within the Blue Zones, they're of the utmost importance. They tend to be much more engaged and they're conscientious toward each other and helpful with each other and more willing to empathize and express feelings. They're also very family centric. So all of these things play a big role. And especially now when we're in this pandemic where we're told to social distance, we're told to not go out, not be around each other, that's going to have huge effects in the future on, you know, we're going to see effects that we're not even thinking about right now. So
yeah,
it just highlights the importance.
Yeah. I mean, we're not here to debunk the Blue Zones, but I definitely say that's one thing that people don't emphasize enough. It's that the group of people that were chosen in that study also had really good social bonding, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think that this one comes up for me all the time. And when Matt said, you know, I think it was at the very end of the episode where he, you know, we had just gone through all this great science, all these devices and all these ways to track. And I mean, he said it so well. He said something to the effect of, I think we're talking probably about glucose monitoring. And he was like, listen, like if I'm having dinner with my wife and she wants to share a chocolate cake, I got to weigh, you know, I got to weigh the pros and cons here on, oh yeah, I'm tracking my glucose. I know it's going to spike, but I can also share a really great experience with my wife and we're out having a good time. Right. So I don't know, for me, that really hit home. It's like, yeah, be conscious of all of this. And like, we're all striving to be as healthy as possible. And we know there's certain things that can help, but at the end of the day, you know, there are benefits as well. And just spending some time and having whatever, having that chocolate cake, as long as you're not having it every night and every week like that. But putting the focus on the relationship. And I think now, since we can't, you know, right now, at least we're not able to see probably as many people as we'd like, we can shift that focus and make sure that we're being present with the ones that are in our bubble or our wives or, you know, husbands and friends, daughters and all of that. But like taking a moment when we're truly in front of someone to be there with them. And I think it's a good way that we can do that now to help with everything that's going on.
I think Conover was speaking about this, just being present in whatever you're doing, completely present. So if you're with your wife or you're with your kids, you know, put the phone down, put things that are distracting you down and just be present with them and just enjoy the moment and really take it all in. Because now more than ever, they're really, really important. But just or even your tribe that you have, your tribe of friends, just be sure you're reaching out, talking to them, spending as much time with them. So there's plenty of health benefits, and it's shown, you know, longevity increases and the quality of your relationships is what MCB was talking about. You know, the quality of those relationships are really, really important to the quality of your life.
Yeah. I just, the way I see it here at Thrive is and this is hitting home with another principle, is that, you know, we push you to step away from being artificial with your devices and that end of things. You know, you don't want to be too involved with technology late at night in bed, but you can go too artificial and automatic the other way as well. You know, Philip and I will often push each other to be healthier and healthier and healthier. But at some point you have to weigh the cost of that and be somewhere in the middle, you know, with your health practices, because obviously you want to make sure that you're not killing yourself with regrets and being so staunch that you forget to be happy and live life.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's where, you know, a team approach and having people around you and having these conversations help, because often you don't even realize if you're in that autopilot going down that road, right? And just having someone remind you like, okay, well, just dial it back a little bit and just trying to balance some of these things.
Always back to the basics, right, Mark?
Yeah, totally. Well, speaking basics, I mean, the other thing we've talked about MCB quite a bit, and the other huge point for her is just the idea of play, right? I think she said at one point, like, when did we stop playing, especially as adults? So it's like we're born playing essentially, and we play to learn and play essentially for everything. And then as we grow older and whatnot, it becomes less and less a part of our lives. Obviously, her company, Limbic Movement, and the classes they teach are heavily based on play. But I think it made us all stop and reflect, right? Like, how can we bring in a little bit more play into our life on a daily and weekly basis?
Don't worry about us, buddy. I had a fire pit party last night, and Dr. G showed up in a Batman costume. So he's all about play.
Play is strong.
Which is also another ancestral principle, right? Fire, sitting around the fire, sitting around with your tribe.
Yeah.
I'm Batman.
Yeah, did they have Batman?
I'm Batman.
No, but you know, I'll add to this, Mark. I think I'm going to go ahead and say it and be super confident. I think that that's one of our fortes at Thrive. I mean, I know that that's how you are. I know that's how Doc G is, and I know that's how I am. And that's the type of people we want to represent when people come to us and get treatment at Thrive. We want to make them understand that it's not about, you know, it's about having fun with their health. Making healthy cool again, I think, is the idea I said in the past, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Remembering to play.
Yeah, part of life is enjoyment. So simple liberties of just freedom, enjoying life as it is. So taking time to reflect on it and actually make it on purpose. So I loved that MCB was talking about that. Just live on purpose and live with purpose and just have fun with it. Don't take yourself too seriously. So just get that adult playbook that you had and just throw it away.
Yeah, just go.
You should have. By the way, Mark, you definitely are not going to get out of this one. Philip has called us out, and we said in the original episode that we were going to film our Limbus movement.
You're right, and I had the excuse of a torn pectoral muscle, so now it's healed. Shit,
it's healed up. It's healed up. So he's holding that to us, and we should hold that to ourselves. So if you're out there listening, it's coming soon.
Yeah, no kidding. I just want one thing to note just on this topic, because I think, again, like just trying to leave people with something they can do right now, you know, other than obviously just a bit of a mindset shift and trying to add in more play. But practically speaking, if you load up your calendar for the week and take a look, you know, and see what's scheduled, what's put down there, you know, are you allowing yourself some time for play? And not to say you need to schedule it in. Maybe for some people, you know, that'll help start it and just, you know, get the process going where it feels, then you can get into a little bit more of a habitual routine on including, you know, some play in there. But I think that's it. You know, if your days are jammed kind of nonstop with meetings and this work and that work, you know, you're kind of just setting yourself up to not have that play in there. So I think it's a good reflection to do at the end of the week to see, all right, you know, where did it work? Where did it didn't for next week? Where can I include a little bit more buffer time to build that in?
Big time. Yeah. You know, my wife is a big animal lover, and we have a 12-year-old bulldog, and I find myself definitely playing more and more because Lola, her name's Lola, she loves to play. And she's big on the research humans combined with animals. And she said that even adds an average of 2 years to your life if you have an animal at home. So,
oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's cool.
There you go.
Yeah. If you even want to take it deeper on the science, apparently just petting the dog, it improves your overall microbiome diversity too, which improves your immunity, improves your health, overall health. So just having an animal in the house and just by the mere fact of petting them, that transfers microbes that they have on their skin and you incorporate them in your microbiome. So interesting stuff.
Love it.
Absolutely.
But Mark, you and I, you know, we have kids and it's a big thing for me. It's like as having to learn to get silly and play and really just let loose. And I've learned a lot from my daughter, just not caring, you know, don't worry about what people are looking or judging or anything like that. And just have fun because as a kid, you just innately do that. And it's as they get older by certain social cues or scripts that MCB was talking about that you kind of start, you know, closing off and you're worried about what people will think or anything like that. So having a child, at least for me, and you can speak about this, Mark, for yourself, but I know for me, it's really opened my ability to play and kind of just relax. Like Rhett was saying, you know, it was Halloween. That's why I was dressed up as Batman. I don't just dress up as Batman just on a regular basis, but
that's what all Batman say.
He does. Come on.
Oh, it was Halloween. Okay. But yeah, so she wanted to dress up as Batgirl. She asked me if I'd dress up. So I'm like, okay, I'll dress up. Went all in. So it's just part of it, just having fun. I'm here. I'm driving her around trick-or-treating dressed up as Batman.
Love it. I was going to say, I think it's like, it's the not caring or like the fact that there's almost zero judgment from kids, you know, at young ages. Like I think I have a 4-year-old and I think of just like, I could literally for an hour, like just make some like repeat a goofy face or sound. And like, that's enough to keep him laughing nonstop. I mean, it's just the simple, like dumbest little things, right? That we just don't do those things anymore. Cause well, I'm probably being judged because my wife's looking at me like, what are you doing? But I don't really care. And he's happy. I'm happy.
We need to get her in the play circle for sure, man.
Yeah, exactly.
Mark, every time I see your face, I start laughing too. So,
well played. I'll take that. Moving on to the next subject of movement.
I think that subject, though, is, I mean, honestly, is that not longevity? Does that not add years to your life? We don't need to do a deep dive on the research to understand that that works, right? So, you know, I know we're joking right now to all the people out there listening, but try it. You know, see how you feel, see how the week goes. If you, like Mark said, if you actually schedule in play.
Yeah, totally. You'll feel it. The other thing you definitely can feel and that I think everyone brought up is just movement.
Absolutely. Right?
And I love how people talk and we talk about it like this as well, but not just saying exercise, but just like movement, like exercise is included in movement, obviously, but just move your body. It's like we've gotten away from moving.
Yeah, we were designed to move. And I think the great plague of our modern time is our sedentary lifestyle. So, or people make it complex. People think like they need to go to the gym and pump iron or jump on the elliptical or whatever it is. But the people that live in these blue zones that have, they enjoy the most longevity, the key thing that stands out is movement. So they walk a lot, they bike, they garden, they're moving. So research has shown just 10,000 steps a day is a decrease in all-cause mortality. So that's huge. So you don't have to get complex. Just get out, move. If you're at a desk, stand up, move every 50 minutes, just for 10 minutes and then start your work back up. But it's simple principles like that. We can go deep into the different types of exercises that improve longevity and why they do so. But at the very basics, so we're going back to the basics again, just get out and move. Preferably, if you can do a lot of your movement outdoors, you're going to knock out a few different ancestral principles all at once. So get out there and move, people.
Yeah. Well, and there were some examples of just like, you know, the growing gardens and being outside, like you said. And I think the other thing I'd add is just, I thought about this when thinking about, you know, getting down and kind of working in the garden, but you think of everyone's been here where they have someone in their life where they're getting older and they're in their 90s, let's say. And like the scariest thing is that they fall down, right? And then they can't get back up or break something. And we've kind of gone away from like floor living essentially, or like getting, like, I mean, my own mother's like this and she's not very old at all, but like getting up is challenging, right? So the more we can keep those muscles to get up and down off of the ground, like this isn't rocket science. This is basic stuff. Just that alone, right, can improve the quality of your life and the end years.
Yeah, but that's also driven by data as well, Mark. You know, you're touching on stuff that's been tested and proven that, you know, the issue that's facing men and women in later stages of life is sarcopenia, or decrease in muscle mass. So, you know, movement is the best medicine. Even conventional medicine knows that. Patients that get sick and in the hospital, they get really sick when they become, you know, bedridden or can't move. So,
fair.
You know, to all the people that are out there and healthy, really make a point to get out and get moving, because movement is the best medicine.
Yeah, to piggyback on that, it's the other thing that affects people are bone loss of bone mineral density. So sarcopenia, so loss of muscle mass, and then loss of the bone mineral density. Those two things are what are going to predict frailty. And the two ways, the main way to do to maintain those two factors are weight bearing exercises. So this is where strength training that I believe Kara was talking about. This is one of her favorite things to do is strength training, but weight bearing exercises are going to improve muscle mass and bone density. So those two things. And as you were saying, Mark, you were touching on the ability to get up off the floor. So there's actually a test where you have somebody sit on the floor and you have them get up and you measure how many points it takes for them to use for them to get up. And that's kind of, there's a scale.
Really?
You can determine how frail somebody will be and how risk of a hip fracture they are at risk for hip fractures. So, and you know, essentially, you get a hip fracture in your older years, it's almost a death sentence. It's a very bad thing to have. So what you're trying to do in this longevity quest is to ensure that you're strong and healthy so that in your latter years that you're not frail. So they highlight like the Okinawans, they sit all the time from when they're very young, and they don't sit in chairs. They are much more spry and can get up off the floor easily because they've practiced it over and over. And like your mother or other people that aren't used to doing that, we kind of lose that. So this is where maintaining flexibility, doing yoga, doing Goda is one of the big things that we can touch on, is a philosophy that we use at Thrive. All these different functional movement exercises are important to maintain your strength, flexibility, and your ability to move and be strong and healthy.
Yeah. So I'm going to flip the script real quick. I've got a really good prompt for you, Mark. You know, we had a patient the other day who would start on some peptides. He had some knee pain and he was feeling amazing. And he made the comment like, oh, well, you know, I'm not sure if it's placebo. And Dr. Conover says this a lot. I'm not quoting him. This is a paraphrase, but and I do believe in this paraphrase, but this idea that, you know, if it's placebo, if it's in the mind, but you feel a positive effect, is it not real? You know, so and here's a quote from Dr. Conover. There's only one thing that is shown to be effective in all types of cancer, and that one thing is positive thinking. You know, so I want you to touch on that, Mark. Talk about the visualization, affirmations, and the effect it has on health.
It totally. I mean, I think it's everything. It's one of the largest components. And Dr. Conover, I think he said something else too that stuck with me. With like, if you don't, you have to believe in it for it to work, right? And I love how he starts all of his treatment and all of his programs with that whole notion of like, let's get into the mind and make sure things are firing and the perspective is there, which obviously we're doing the same thing, but I see this time and time again when on my other podcasts as well, and just through mental fitness work. Like there's athletes out there, like Olympic level athletes, that literally can make themselves sweat just in a meditation or visualization. So essentially, you know, causing physical reactions just through the mind. So, you know, like when you close your eyes and start doing that type of work, like most people can resonate with that on the sports side of things, right? Where, you know, like I said, you're visualizing, you know, ripping down a downhill ski course, and they go through the motions over and over so that once they're in the actual race, it's intuitive. But we can also do that. You don't have to be an Olympic athlete to do that. We can also do that if you're presenting somewhere, if you're thinking about a big project and how you want it to go, or, you know, right back down to how do you want this week to play out, or the day to play out, right? And Philip, you mentioned some of the like infrared sauna stuff, which is another topic that has come up quite a bit in this docuseries. But, you know, I personally use that time when sitting in, like, let's say a sauna, to visualize the day, if you're doing that in the morning, right? Like, how do I want to feel? It's just powerful stuff. And you're, from my perspective, it's not super complicated. You're simply priming your mind to be in that state and to look for the things that will support how you want to feel in that day. And you're less reactive, obviously, in that situation, because you're intentional with what you're doing. And that, I think, has come across every guest really on this show, to not only help guide them through their life, but also help reduce chronic stress as well.
Yeah, I just want to provide a couple of sentences of anecdotal input. So, you know, I spent a couple of years in conventional pain medicine, and living with pain is devastating, obviously. But one thing that I saw with my own patients is the patients that felt hopeless always did worse. And the patients, despite being in pain, that felt like they had some sort of control over their treatment, their recovery, always did better. You know, so, and again, I'm going to sound redundant. I don't really care, but I want to make sure that people understand at Thrive that that's what we do. And that's why we have the team approach, is that while we're helping you, you know, get healthier, if we can, you know, make you believe in what we're doing and believe in what you're doing and empower you, then you're going to have a better result.
Yeah.
It was interesting. And in the episode with MCB, she was talking about why she went into psychiatry, and she had this experience where she witnessed this patient that had almost these stroke-like symptoms. And it was from, she had this horrific past trauma, and that it kind of manifested itself as this physical
it's a psychosomatic disorder. Like physical representation of her emotional pain.
Yeah. So that's what it manifested as. And MCB was talking about that. And then it shows you the power of the mind. So there's the nocebo effect, which is when you have a negative, you think that there's going to be a negative outcome and it happens. And then the placebo effect, where there's this positive outcome. So there's a lot of power in the mind. So Dr. Conover was very astute in saying, yeah, if somebody believes in the treatment, it's going to be more effective. So if you have this fear of a treatment, or you automatically go into a negative state when you get bad news, a lot of times that negative state is going to manifest into physical symptoms. It's going to cause you to get unhealthy. It's going to cause you to feel unwell. And it also may cause you to have the negative effect that you have already programmed into your mind.
For sure. No, I agree. Do we want to, I'm just looking at some of the other topics, obviously, that were covered, and just to respect the time. So, because we could literally do this for 3 hours. Do we want to cover off maybe some nutrition, and then some of the other like interventions that you guys can speak probably a little bit more confidently about, but like just peptides and things like that?
Yeah. So let's touch on nutrition. Obviously, we had a great podcast with Kara, and we talked about the continuous glucose monitors, the CGM, which allows us to understand real-time data, what's going on inside your body. And I think that leads us to the idea of personalization when it comes to nutrition. You know, there's no room for dogma in the future of the idea of how we attack appropriate nutrition for people. You know, so we have genetic studies, we have real-time data from wearable devices. There's no reason why we shouldn't be able to look at each client and come up with the best diet for them. And again, you know, in our discovery, it comes back to the basics: whole foods, nutrient dense, and then personalization based on how each person responds to each different type of food based on what we talked about. And it's really important because it is the gateway to, I think, what is facing 90% of our population today based on metabolic health, metabolic dysfunction, excuse me, autoimmune disease, cancer, dementia, cardiovascular disease, blood pressure. All these things we're finding out are linked to what you put in your body, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I saw a quote somewhere at one point, you're either fueling health or you're fueling disease. I mean, it's one or the other, right? And I think if we're not thinking about it and we're on autopilot, by default, we're fueling disease given what we're being marketed and, you know, the sugar, the this, the that. So, you know, the point I want to make on this, just on the mental fitness side of things, we've got incredible information out there, great devices like what Kara's using and the CGMs and whatnot. But I think, you know, in combination with that, there has to be some really solid mental fitness there. And there has to be some really clear goals on, all right, remember why you decided you're deciding to eat in this way, right? Because it's going to be hard. Because it's going to be most likely, if we're trying to eat in a really healthy way, it's going to be against the grain, right? And we're going to be challenged. And I mean, I'm like that as well. You guys are always helping me along that road in a friendly way. But it's just, we're surrounded by tough decisions when it comes to nutrition. So my advice to anyone listening would be to make sure you're super clear on the why behind why you're choosing to eat in a certain way, so that when those tough moments come up, you can go back to that purpose, right? And hopefully make the decision that supports it the best. And if you don't, be kind about yourself or kind to yourself, but take a few minutes to reflect, to journal, like, you know, why? You know, why? What was the trigger that, you know, allowed you to slip up in that sense, knowing that, you know, you're doing it for a certain reason, and then hopefully the next time you don't repeat.
Yep. It was all of our guests that even highlighted that about the focus on the food and beating ourselves up. So yes, it's good to be disciplined in your approach. And like you said, Mark, just reflecting and kind of really focusing on why you're doing this. But also people have slip ups and then they beat themselves up, and then they get stressed about beating themselves up, and then they feel like they got to go kill themselves in the gym to work that off, and think it was Kara that was talking about that, that exercise should not be framed as a punishment for something you ate. So you should look at it very differently. So not, you know, it's not just about burning off the calories, but really focusing on your overall metabolic health by focusing in on eating healthy and why you're eating healthy, and kind of just reframing that. So it was a pretty insightful way of looking at nutrition and health.
I think also that to add, it comes back to your tribe as well. You know, when it comes to pat yourself on the back, when it comes to nutrition, the world is against you. So finding people you can associate with and build a tribe with around healthy living practices is extremely important. And so nutrition is one of them. And, you know, I'd make the statement, not all heroes wear capes, but, you know, at Thrive, we do wear capes.
Literally.
Talking about Batman here. But, you know, that's another thing we're going to do at Thrive, is try to support you, because like you said, Mark, this stuff is tough, man. It is tough to make these daily decisions. When you wake up to when you go to bed, you're indoctrinated with bad decision preferences everywhere you turn.
Yeah. So true.
And in the future, we're going to do a deeper dive, and we will do a docuseries on diet and nutrition. But there are some basic ancestral kind of principles to follow. So like we said, eating whole foods, eating nutritious foods, eating the cleanest foods that you can. So kind of knowing where you're sourcing your food. So trying to lower your glyphosate load. So that's a toxin that they use. It's called Roundup, which is used as a weed killer when they're growing crops. And that's something you want to decrease by getting organic, going to a farmer's market. If you're going to eat meat, getting grass-fed, grass-finished, getting wild meat that's sustainably raised or
pasture-raised,
or that's that's not finished off in a feedlot. Or if you're be humane about the food that you're going to eat, if you're going to eat animal foods, and if you're going to eat vegetables, also understand where those vegetables are coming from, making sure that they're organically grown. Make sure that you're getting food from regenerative farms. Kind of educate yourself on all aspects of where your food is coming from. So the quality of the food is one of the most important things. So whether you're going to be carnivore, whether you're going to be vegan, all these things, you have to understand the nutrients of those foods and like what you're going to be lacking if you go one way or the other, and knowing the consequences of whatever nutritional decisions you make so that you're educated. So like Rhett was saying earlier, you know, the part of what we do at Thrive is empower our clients. So we want to empower people to make the right decision for them based on all the data that we have, all the science, and then they can make their choice for themselves of what kind of nutritional plan that they want to follow. But we want them to really understand their choices. So, but, you know, one of the things that Rhett was touching on was that you wake up and you're inundated with just kind of marketing and stuff for making, or things that make making nutritional choices confusing. But some of the basic things to avoid are seed oils. So seed oils, canola oil, vegetable oil, sesame seed oil, peanut oil, all these things are very, very bad for us. And they're not natural. These are not ancestral type of whole natural foods, processed foods, fast foods, refined sugar, sodas, all these things are basic things to avoid. So soy, corn, wheat, gluten, all these things have very highly inflammatory effects on the human body. So start with those things. And then, like I said, we'll do a deep dive into nutrition at some point when we do another docuseries. And then we'll also, if you're a Thrive client, you'll have very, very personalized and precision-based advice on your diet and nutrition.
Yeah, it's such a huge topic. It's definitely warrants a docuseries. And I think anyone that's going down this road, and you should, just because, I mean, if you think of how often you're fueling your body, right? Or eating, like it's obviously a daily thing. So it has a huge impact. But I would say, even just for myself, just trying to take it in stages, right? Like you don't have to do it all tomorrow. You know, set some goals for yourself that, you know, this month I want to, you know, try to reduce my refined sugar. Or, you know, next month, if you know you have a gluten sensitivity, you know, can add that part to the mix or something. Right. So it's not, so it doesn't become so overwhelming that you're kind of setting yourself up to fail in it, because it's just too hard to do it all in one shot.
Yeah. I'm going to maybe flip the script one more time and just talk about one thing I think is really important. And it wraps up a lot of what we're talking about, even in terms of ancestral living. And I think that is an appropriate amount of mental and physical stress. And I'm not talking about going out and doing a 4-hour workout and sleeping 2 hours and all the stuff we talked about not doing. It puts yourself under a lot of oxidative stress. But I think the take home message here is an appropriate amount of stress, you know, whether it's journaling and kind of labeling your feelings for the day, or getting out in the sun, or, you know, like Philip talked about, getting moving, doing some exercise, some weight resistance. But then there's also cold thermogenesis, you know, stuff that actually will help and has been shown to increase longevity, like cold plunges, cold showers, dry saunas, infrared saunas. There's a whole host of biohacks we talked about in this series that would actually increase the longevity of your life and the ability for you to live a long, healthy life.
Well, just even on the cold therapy, something that I talk about a lot is, I mean, there, you know, what you're alluding to, just the benefits of actually, you know, doing that therapy for your body. But then there's a whole other mental fitness side of that, because most people, even the ones that are doing it often, you know, aren't usually going out there saying, I can't wait to jump into a cold plunge. So it's like, there's a mental trigger there that helps you throughout the day and throughout the weeks and months and years that you're doing something you don't necessarily want to do. And you're training and priming your mind to do it anyway, knowing that there's going to be benefit from that. So it's just, again, it's just these little micro mental pauses that the more of those things we introduce in our routines, the more that they intuitively show up for all types of decision making that we, you know, we have to make throughout life.
Yeah, one of the other hormetic stresses, and this is what we're discussing right now, is just the acute stressors that stimulate a favorable and beneficial adaptive response is fasting. So we had what Rhett highlighted was cold and heat, and then fasting as well. So fasting also builds up resilience. So if you think about it from an ancestral point of view, we didn't wake up in the morning and have breakfast available to us. So we went out and we had to go forage or hunt or do whatever it took to get some food. So you had times of feast and famine, depending on the seasons as well. So in our modern world, we're just constantly stuffing our face nonstop from the time we wake up till the time we go to sleep. So we don't give the body to be have the ability to be metabolically healthy, because we're just constantly just bombarding it with food. Whereas if you just sometimes do a time restriction in feeding, either doing only eating at certain times of the day for a certain amount of time for like 6 or 12 hours, or doing intermittent fasting, or every now and then do a 24-hour fast, all these things are going to improve your resiliency. So like you said, from a mental fitness standpoint, when you do things that are hard, you build resilience, you build mental fortitude, and you get stronger. So same thing when you're challenging the body in those aspects as well.
Yeah, I think that the concluding statement is that there's a fine line between seeking comfort and, or like, let's use another term, recovery, right? You want to heal yourself. But also I think seeking these stressors, the data shows that, like Philip said, it's going to make you more resilient. So don't hesitate to push yourself a little bit. And I think you'll see the benefits. I want to bring up the True Age test and a lot of the great things that Ryan is doing over there at True Diagnostics. And if you remember, for the listeners out there that didn't listen to it, it's actually a test that can help you establish your biological age. I know we have a chronological age, but it's a test that can establish your biological age. And obviously this podcast is based on this docuseries is based on longevity. So what a great way to actually trend the longevity practices by taking this test.
Yeah, so you can use this test. This test is based on the Horvath clock, and you can look that up, and it's based on DNA methylation. So your DNA gets methylated when certain events happen. So that affects your biological age. So your biologic age could be the same as your chronologic age. You'd prefer it to be less, or sometimes it can be worse. It can be more than your biologic age. So what we do when you are trying to use any of these biohacks or any of these molecular compounds, what you're trying to do is you want to see if they're working. So this is a great way to test to see if the interventions that you are using are actually working. So you do your biologic age test, and then you implement all these different protocols, and then you can retest it to see if you've had some improvement. And the hope is that you do have some improvement.
Yeah. And for the non-science guy over here, I mean, the way I look at this stuff is just, it's just, again, it's data and it's increasing awareness of what's happening, right? Like I feel there's some different types of people and body types and whatnot that are out there. Like you could look physically healthy and think you're doing really well, but on the inside, whether that's mental and on a cellular level, like there could be some stuff there that needs to be course corrected, which a test like this, I think, brings that to light, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And if you're going to start messing around with some of these peptides or NAD or other medications like metformin or rapamycin, be sure that you're working with some physicians that have some experience in doing so. So at Thrive, you know, we've been trained by the best and we've learned how to use these compounds. But the big thing with peptides, everybody is always asking about peptides. And you can order peptides off the internet, but buyer beware. So a lot of the peptides on the internet, when they're tested, have been shown like 80% of them are not actually what they say they are. And a lot of them have different compounds in there that are harmful to you. They have contaminants, toxic metals, things of that sort, or alcohol in them. So you got to be really careful. So if you're going to do it, please find a practice or physicians that are highly trained in it and that can guide your usage of any of these compounds. So that's our big takeaway there, is just make sure that you're doing these things safely, because there are some risks when doing these things if you don't know what you're doing.
All right. So, you know, just to be conscious of time, why don't we just leave a final thought from each of us on some of the stuff we talked about or that was left from the guests in this series. I think, you know, obviously the main topic that we've been covering is just getting back to basics and ancestral living. So for me, coming from kind of, I guess, let's just say the mental fitness guy and the way I think about this is just trying to inject a little bit more pause in the day. You know, I use that example of the coffee machine and, you know, just taking literally not even a minute to like poke my head out the door to look at the sun rising and, you know, take a deep breath, but just trying to be a little bit more conscious every day to bring in more of those moments. Or like, you know, I see the sun just finally came out over here, you know, just go grab a glass of water. And again, like just stick my head out and get some sun, like just these small little things that I know over time, especially after talking with all these guests, will continue to add up.
Yeah. I think that for me, it boils down to one term, and this always comes back to resonate with how I feel, is balance. And if you look at all of the things we learned through this podcast or this docuseries, excuse me, it's a balance of several different things. And, you know, you can work out too hard. You can be too extreme on your diet. You can be too extreme either way on your sleep, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So when I feel my best, I feel like I'm completely in balance. And that's even, you know, going out with the wife and having a piece of cake. So yeah. I think that balance is key. And I know that that's when I produce, I have the highest production in my life, and I can see the fruits of that.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, what I took away a lot of this is all longevity is modifiable for us. So 20% of longevity is determined by your genetics, but the other 80% is determined by the environment that you live in. So all the controllable factors that we just went over in the entire podcast. So, and it all starts back to the basics. Like we said, you know, you can do the fancy things, you can add in the NAD, you can add in peptides, you can add in rapamycin, all these different molecular compounds to try to optimize. But at the end of the day, if you don't fix the basics of sleep, movement, stress reduction, eating properly, eating whole foods, and then having social engagements, being part of a tribe, all those things need to be addressed first, or else then the fancy scientific cool technology, all of it can be icing on top of the cake if you correct the basics first. So I really liked that all of the guests, when they got down to discussing what their own routines and hacks are, it comes down to just basic things. So that's what people try to make it more complex than what it is.
Great points. Great points. All right, guys. Well, thanks for jamming. This was fun. It was a really fun series to kick this podcast off on. Great guests. I'm super pumped. Just to give the listeners some preview to what's to come, the next series we're working on is centered around immunity. You know, looking at how you define immunity, what does it mean to build up our immunity? How can we be resilient to disease and the viruses that, you know, we know will continue to come throughout the years? And just figuring out, again, just like what we just talked about now with longevity, but like what are the actions we can take today to achieve our peak immunity? And what are some of the non-negotiables that the guests that will come on in that series practice to be at their peak health and have a really solid immunity.